Hey everybody, this is Kevin Riles. Thank you for joining us this week on The Real Estate of Life with Kevin Riles. I'm excited to have you with me again. I'm going to do something a little different this week. I was asked last week to sit down on a radio program called Real on Real Estate with Kamisha and Tamisha, and they wanted me to talk about commercial real estate. So this topic may be a little advanced for some, but if you're thinking about leasing commercial real estate or buying commercial real estate, I think you'll find a lot of good information. So enjoy this week's podcast, and I'll see you next week as well. Thanks.
Support for this program comes from the Digital Broadcasting Network, presenting podcasts and web series from everyday people who have an extraordinary passion to make the world a better place. To view this podcast, visit channel713.com, or you can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, or whichever podcasting service you use. Welcome to the next generation of broadcasting.
So before I get into jump into straight leasing, if you're out there and you are a business owner or you're considering starting a business, first and foremost, inside of commercial real estate, there are different silos. So you can lease different types of property. Mm-hmm. So are you a retail business? In other words, a storefront? Are you an office professional services business, office space? Are you an industrial or need what we call flex space, which is a little bit of office up the front and then a warehouse in the back?
Right.
And all of those leases have different connotations and different segments. For instance, I'm negotiating a lease now for a dance studio about 6,500 square feet out in Richmond. Mm-hmm. And so though that particular lease is different than two leases I just negotiated, there's a national franchise coming to town that has been on, have 120 locations on the East Coast. Their restaurant franchise called Golden Crust Caribbean Bakery and Grill. And they're coming to Texas through Houston. And so I just negotiated their first two locations here, and they're restaurant leases. So the considerations for a restaurant lease are totally different than the considerations for a dance studio lease, and totally different from the considerations of an industrial lease. But there are some common things that you have to think about when you are leasing. And first and foremost, has nothing to do with commercial real estate, is the old adage for successful business. Location, location, location,
location,
right?
Yes.
Are you a destination business, or do you need eyes on your site, eyes on your business, I'm sorry. So are you a retail business that needs traffic,
right,
and people to see you? Or are you a retail business that no matter where you are, because of your product, they will come, all right? So that's a retail consideration. For a lot of industrial folks, it's location, but it's location to freeways and major thoroughfares so that trucks can get in and get out, what we call ingress and egress.
Okay.
For industrial, that might be a consideration. Dock height versus half dock height. People say, what's that? When the truck is dropping you off, does the dock come up to the end of the truck where they don't have to get a little ladder to get,
right,
in the truck to get the stuff? Or do you need something where that doesn't matter because it's going to be small trucks and they don't need a dock height, 4 feet height type of warehouse space. So that's an industrial consideration. For a restaurant, for those of you that are thinking about starting a restaurant, two biggest costs for restaurants are that grease trap, right?
Yes.
That grease trap is real, and it costs a lot. And so finding a space possibly that was formerly a restaurant that you can retrofit into your concept is always cheaper than trying to do a new space, because you have to dig and put a grease trap in, and then also that vent hood and, you know, kicking through the top of the roof. So and then office space, again, destination location. Office probably is the easiest as far as location is concerned, but the lease can be a lot more difficult as it pertains to what type of lease. And so depending on the type of business you have, depends on what lease considerations. But some of the common things are term. How long do you want leases? Most commercial leases are at a minimum 3 years or 36 months. The maximum, the two restaurants I told you about from Golden Crust Caribbean Bakery and Grill, they sign 10-year leases. But, and typically restaurants want to sign a longer term lease because the capital requirements to get that space ready, they don't break even until about 5 to 6 years in. In other words, they're spending so much money on that equipment, they don't want to be at the end of their lease so quickly and then have to renegotiate it much more expensively. So, but typically a minimum commercial lease is typically anywhere from 3 years to 5 years is kind of the range for office space typically. But I've seen leases as long as 10, 15 years, depending on the type of business. So term is important. There are certain clauses. your rent acceleration clause if you're not paying your rent on time. Mm-hmm. Unlike a house, so what happens when you don't pay your rent on a house? They can evict you. But even when they evict you, they have to give you 3 days notice, and then you can go to court. Well, first of all, you get 30 days notice, then 3 days notice, then take you to court. You could be in a house another 90 days just going through the process. Not on most typical commercial leases. As soon as they let you know you're in default and you have to cure it within a certain amount of days, if you don't cure it, they can lock your door and place lien on everything inside. So, for instance, if this was a commercial space and the radio station didn't pay, I know they pay their rent. But if they didn't pay their rent, then they could come and lock the door and lay claim on all this equipment. And so that's why you go sometimes, you've been out there at retail going to a certain store and say, oh, it's closed. Big letter on the front door says, right. You know, they're in default and they have until X day to rectify this, or they start selling their stuff. So commercial leases don't play. There is no whole, you know, let me go talk to the judge and the whole. Now, of course, you can get into litigation, but at the end of the day, it's a done deal. So that acceleration clause that says that after you are default, say 10 days, some leases will have 10 days, then they could cure the default by locking you out. So I just negotiated a provision on this lease in Richmond for the dance studio that we bumped it out to 90 days because, you know, what if I just had a bad month and things are kind of going, give me a little bit more time to kind of accelerate that. So your term, your lease rates. So typically when you are seeing or looking for a commercial space, lease rates are calculated on an annual basis. Mm-hmm. So they may say it's $12 a square foot, or it's $15 a square foot, or it's $30 a square foot, or $33 a square foot. And so people sometimes get confused by that because they'll say, well, let's just say it's a small space, 1,000 square feet. Mm-hmm. They're saying, oh, $15 times 1,000, that's $15,000 a month. Oh my God, no, that's an annual quote. So right. You have to do the calculation and divide it by 12. Mm-hmm. So just to make the math simple, if someone is quoting a $12 a square foot lease rate, on an annual basis, you divide that by 12, that's a dollar a square foot on a monthly basis. So that trips a lot of people up as far as that lease rate. So just realize that if you see a double digit number, 9 times out of 10, it's an annual quote, but there are places in Houston where that is a monthly quote. Mm-hmm. The Galleria area, that could be a monthly quote. So but most of the time that's an annual quote. So you have your lease rates, your term. You have what they call triple net charges or common area maintenance charges. A lot of people will see that $12 a square foot or $1 a square foot, and they'll say, oh, okay, it's $1 a square foot. Great, I can afford 2,000 square feet. That's $2,000 a month. And they don't ask or don't know that there's an additional charge for what we call common area maintenance. And common area maintenance or triple net charges are the taxes for the building, the insurance for the building, the property management for the building, the security system for the building. All those particular things are added on top of that. So you might have a dollar a square foot base rent, and you might have another 50 cents in triple net charge. So the real rate is $1.50 a square foot, or $16 or $18 a square foot. So those are kind of the four things that I think people kind of don't know or don't understand when they're looking for commercial space, or the term, kind of acceleration charges, what happens if they default, how to calculate the rent, and then triple net charges. And typically, the triple net charges are not negotiable, but the lease rate is, the base rate.
You stated that they can put a letter on the door and just lock it.
Yes, most leases, they can do what the lease says, and most of the time the lease says that they can do that.
Because on the residential side, we no longer can put the letter on the front of the door. We have to put it on, we have to go in and put it on the
really?
Inside.
Really? So that's a lot. I'm learning something today. I didn't know. Yeah, I haven't evicted anybody in a long time.
Right, so
yeah.
Pay up on both sides.
Right, exactly.
And this is why I tell a lot of my
that's
friends
dangerous,
that
actually.
When you're in real estate, there's so many aspects. That's why I don't do commercial. I like to have my commercial specialist because you never know. There's so many aspects on it.
Right.
And all those people that are looking to come into real estate, find out what your niche is. Commercial may be your niche. All this stuff Kevin has given me is new knowledge.
That's chapter 1 in my book. Your niche will make you rich. Cash.
Hey,
yeah.
Give that book.
You didn't even
look.
Know that, MC.
No,
Confessions of a Top Producer, 9 Tools for Sales Success and Abundance. One of the chapters in the book is Your Niche Will Make You Rich. If you're in sales or in entrepreneurship, you should be known for one specific thing. A lot of us don't like to do that because we think we're going to miss business other places. But if you're known for one specific good thing, then eventually you can grow into other things. I was known as the foreclosure guy because I had the contractor to list all the HUD foreclosures for 5 years. So when people thought of foreclosures, they thought of me. Well, that's how people started coming to me, and then they wanted to start buying commercial real estate. So that's how I moved over into commercial real estate. So your niche will make you rich.
It definitely will.
I'm still broke, but I'm trying to get there.
So you talked a lot about base rent, triple net rent. So let's talk about the build-out.
So depending on the type of landlord you're dealing with, there's a thing called a TI allowance, a tenant improvement allowance. And the TI allowance is a mechanism for the landlord to possibly incent you to use their space. So they may give you a $10 a square foot TI allowance. So if you, in this particular case, I'll use this particular deal. We have a 6,500, or we're asking for, this is a brand new center, no one's ever occupied, so this is brand new space. We have 6,500 square feet. We have negotiated $120,000 worth of TI allowance. And so what they're gonna do is, what happens with a tenant improvement allowance, because no one's ever been in this space, there's nothing there. There's no electric. I mean, there's electric to the building, but to the space, nothing's ever been built. It's literally just a shell space.
Yes.
So they're going to reimburse them $120,000 worth of money for them basically to get the space right now. That's not their entire build-out budget. Their build-out budget is about double that, but it'll pay for, in the landlord's mind, if I give them TI allowance, especially on a new center like this, they're going to have to bring electrical, they're going to have to bring plumb, they're going to have to bring the things that another tenant would need after, even after they're gone. So
right.
I'm going to have to pay for it one way or another. Either I'm going to have to build a shell space that has that stuff in there, or I can reimburse them to do that. And so landlords typically on brand new spaces will give TI allowances, and it depends on the type of building, the type of lease, if it's industrial or retail. And it also depends on the landlord. Some landlords don't do TI allowances. They'll give you free rent. And I put free in quotes for those that are listening. Instead, they'll give you 6 months of no rent. That's really what it is, no rent. To compensate for, let's say they want to give you 20 grand in TI, but they don't want to cut you a check. They'll, if your rent is $3,000 a month, they'll give you 6 months, that's 18 grand. Or they'll give you 7 months, 18 grand of no rent to compensate for the fact you get to keep that money in your pocket and you can do your TI with that. And then on this particular deal, we negotiated both. So I negotiated 6 months worth of, they were really trying to get someone in here, 6 months worth of free rent plus the TI component, because this will be the largest tenant they have in that particular space. So, but yeah, build out. Some mom and pops don't like to cut the check.
Right.
They'll do the free rent. Some mom and pops will cut a check, but they won't cut it that large. Some of the larger tenant landlords, like real estate investment trusts, those two restaurants, for instance, that I mentioned, one of them is at the Shops at Three Corners over there at Fiesta by NRG Stadium,
okay,
right across the street, in kind of Restaurant Row there on the side, right by Ross and Fiesta.
Right.
So that is owned by a real estate investment trust.
Okay.
They did a tenant improvement allowance to them, and they'll get reimbursed based on what they, based on certain items that they will, they have to show proof that
completion.
Okay. Right. So they'll actually get a check.
Okay.
Depending on your, what you negotiate, everything. So commercial real estate is more like the Wild Wild West. Everything is negotiable.
Right. Texas is Wild Wild West.
Yeah. Texas is the Wild Wild West. So, whereas residential real estate, because of the number of transactions, there's kind of a flow to it, and things pretty much, everything's negotiable in residential as well, but there's a lot more structure to it. With commercial, there's not as much laws that are, you know, we have laws that you know, I guess what I'm trying to say, we have laws on the residential side that kind of govern how we do business, like RESPA and things of that
right.
nature. Commercial doesn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
So between the bank and the landlords and you, you can kind of negotiate the deals that you want. There are some nomenclature, but there's not as much strictness. So I say all that to say that pretty much any deal that you can work out with a landlord is game.
Okay.
Is game. Whether it be the rental rates, how you are reimbursed. There are things called percentage in some malls. especially they have percentage leases. So they get a portion of your revenue at, above a certain number. So there are all kinds of ways to kind of negotiate commercial leases.
What type of documents would your clients need to start this process? Will they need a profit and loss sheet?
Right. So most of the time, you don't really need a quote-unquote document. However, what I have people do is I have them fill out a personal financial statement. I was about to use the acronym, PFS. And most larger landlords have their own. But if you submit a letter of intent with a personal financial statement, they typically take you a little bit more seriously. And that PFS is for the owner or the owner's business if it's an existing business. And it just basically says how much cash you have on hand, what assets you have, and things of that nature. Sometimes they'll ask for financials or CPA prepared or CPA audited financials, depending on the size of the lease. Some of the much larger leases, if you're going to take a 100,000 square feet space in a large, they want to make sure that you can make that payment. But typically for some of the smaller to mid-sized businesses, a personal financial statement is sufficient.
It's sufficient as well as a credit driven?
It can be. I would say, and this is another shout out, I have a podcast called The Real Estate of Life on Kevin Rounds. You can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. My reason I bring that up is because my last podcast number 4, was on credit. And so 30 minutes I spent all on credit, how credit scores are calculated, what things you can do to improve, and some of the kind of tricks of the trade I've learned over the last 20 years. But I say all that to say, yes, sometimes they will pull credit. Depends on the longevity of the business. If you're a startup, you'd expect that they're going to pull your credit. But then there are some, for instance, Boxer Properties, which is an office landlord and owner here in the Houston area, they don't pull credit. They basically say, you got a credit card,
pay.
You're good. Here's your office space.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I used Boxer before.
Right. They were my first office space back in the day as
well. And they will lock you out the day that you're late.
Yeah, they don't play. Yeah, they do not play at all. Not a none.
Yeah, because I know some of them, they ask for a personal guarantee if you are doing it under a company's name.
They do. And I would expect that to happen for very small businesses or businesses that have not been in business for a long time. And for instance, this particular dance company that I'm talking about, they are a startup. She's been in the business, but this is the first time she's done on her own. Mm-hmm. So she has the personal guarantee. In fact, she had to get a couple of other guarantors, even though her credit scores are okay, because of the size of that TI check.
Right.
They want to make sure they didn't spend that money and then she defaults. They will definitely ask for a personal guarantee. Sometimes they will ask for a personal guarantee and not pull your credit. They just want to be able to come after your assets.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Well, we talked about build out. So let's talk about a wet lease. I don't know what that is personally.
Wet lease?
It's called, what is a wet lease?
Mm-hmm. I've never heard of a wet lease.
Oh. Yeah, well, we did some research. We should do some research on the web.
A triple net lease?
So we talked about triple net.
Okay.
We talked about
triple net.
So,
you know what? Yeah, look, I'm not afraid to say I don't know. I have not heard of a wet lease, but I will go look it up.
But you know, that just means it's not common.
Yes. No, right.
That just means it's not common.
Different types of leases that I'm aware of. The most common, I would say, are triple net leases and then full service leases. Typically, your office lease is a full service lease. Full service meaning there's no extra CAM charge or triple net charge. Everything is included in the rate. So office leases are typically full service leases. So this office space that we're sitting in now, you don't have to pay a separate. Everything is cooked in, including the electricity and water and things of that nature. So there are modifications of triple net, like modified gross and things of that nature, where some things are included in triple net and some things that you are responsible for. But the term wet, I've never heard of. So.
Don't worry about it. It's fine. It is perfectly fine. All right, so we want to talk about equity leases and gross net leases.
Ooh,
what's the difference?
Man, this is let me straighten my tie up.
I'm sorry. We're laid back. We're very
Let me say this. I would say that those are advanced topics.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm not saying I won't talk. I would say that that is where you would want definitely to hire a hire me or hire someone to look at, because so for instance a modified gross lease, right? So if you take that triple net, and I'm gonna get real technical, if you take that triple net and let's say that the taxes, the insurance, the water are included, the taxes and insurance included, but they don't include the water. You got to pay the water. Let's say you're a washateria. You got to pay your own water out of it. Normally, that would be a triple net charge. Well, that's called a modified gross lease. In other words, we extracted something out of the triple net that normally you would include in the triple net, but because you're such a high user of it, we're going to extract that out. Or it might also be we normally would service the air conditioning unit, but because you're such a data center or a gym and you're blowing and going, you're responsible for that. So that's when the modified gets put in front of something, they're modifying what is kind of standard, basically.
Got it.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that works. That absolutely works.
That absolutely we didn't mean to make you.
No, I mean,
we like to put you on toes.
Yeah, exactly. I got to go look up wet leases. So,
That's okay. Thank you so much. This has been a wealth of information about commercial leasing. I hope you guys have learned a lot. If not, reach out to Kevin Rawls. He will gladly help you, or reach out to me. Let me get a part of that commission.
Referral
fee. So thank you guys for tuning in. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back about, I guess we'll talk about purchasing a little bit.
All right. Hi, you're listening to The Real Estate of Life with Kevin Riles.
So we're back. We just talked about commercial leasing. Now we're going to talk about commercial purchasing. Now you lease for a while, or you just want to start out buying instead of leasing. Kevin's going to give us brief tips on purchasing a home. I'm so used to saying homes, you guys.
Right.
Purchasing a commercial building, some documents you may need, and how this commercial side really works.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about the types of commercial loans.
Types of commercial loans. There's good loans and there's bad loans. No, I'm joking.
Okay.
Types of commercial loans. There are conventional loans, just like a house. You have conventional loans. Conventional meaning that they conform to standards that would allow the bank to possibly sell it in the secondary market. Some local banks keep their servicing, so they service their own loans. In other words, they keep the paper. You make payments to that bank, and they make payments to other banks as well. Their investors. Mm-hmm. So conventional basically meaning conforming. They conform to some level of a standard. So the two most common types are conventional loans and SBA loans.
Okay.
SBA is a loan guarantee program. And what does that mean? What it means is that the Small Business Administration will guarantee that the buyer or borrower in this case will make good on the loan. And because they're willing to guarantee that, the lender reduces the requirement for down payment. So typically on a conventional loan, depending on the level of asset, banks can require anywhere from 20% to sometimes 30 or 40% down. With an SBA loan, typically, depending on the product type or the investment type, it can be as little as 10% down and not maybe more than 15% down. And because they're willing to offer that guarantee, if the buyer meets certain requirements and if the loan meets certain requirements, they charge an SBA funding fee on top of the loan. And typically that funding fee can be as high as 2 to 2.25%. of the loan, and typically it can be paid as a part of your down payment or it can be financed into the loan. So a lot of people don't like SBA loans because of that funding fee, but if you do the math, if I only have to put 10% down and let's say I pay that funding fee at closing in cash, up to 2%, that's 12% down versus a conventional loan is 20% down. So the math still works. They also sometimes don't particularly care for SBA loans is because the rates are higher. Well, SBA guarantees are what they call a credit modifier. In other words, it is undergirding the credit worthiness of the particular buyer. So because of that, if you take a financial institutions class in the MBA program, we talk a lot about calculation of interest rate and how interest rates actually are calculated. Typically, interest rates are calculated, the base part of the interest rate is calculated based on the cost of the money for the lender. So how much is it costing the lender to get the money, plus their profit margin, plus risk, right? Mm-hmm. So what they're getting the money for, so if, let's say it's a 7% interest rate, they may be getting, and I'm just making up these numbers, but they may be getting the money for 4% themselves, right? That's their cost. Then they want a 2% margin. And then how risky is your loan? And so they want to calculate interest rate risk. So because SBA loans are riskier, then you have a situation where the interest rates are higher than a conventional loan. And so therefore, plus you're putting less down, that's a riskier loan just by default. So because of that, interest rates on SBA loan can be higher. So my first commercial loan for my own, I bought an office building back in 2005. I did an SBA loan. I did an SBA 7A loan. And so there are different types of SBA loans, more than I'll mention here, but the two most common, and let me also say that SBA loans are for owner-occupied commercial real estate. It is not for investment real estate. Okay. So SBA loans are for you if you're going to occupy more than 51% or more of a particular building, whether that be a retail center. If your commercial store is going to occupy 51% or more, you can use an SBA loan. If that's going to be an industrial place or office building. But there are two types, 7A and 504. 7A are typically the smaller of the loans. That's what I used. The 7A and the 504 numbers come from the chapter and code of the actual SBA guidelines. So that's where you get, just like on residential FHA 203B and 203K. It's the same deal. So 7As are typically, in my experience, under $2 million, under $3 million loans. I think they can go to $5 million, but don't quote me, I'm not a lender on that. Typically require 10% down. You can roll in what we call your pre-purchase cost low. If you did an inspection, if you're getting a sign, if you pay for architectural drawings, that's a part of your down payment. So if you're paying for that stuff up front and your down payment is $40,000 and you paid $5,000 in pre-cost, then when you come to closing, they can give you a credit for that, so that can reduce the amount of your down payment.
That's good to know.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that, so they assume that they have to do that. So it's always good to ask, because some lenders, to be honest with you, SBA loan officers should know, but some lenders don't know that you can get a credit against your down payment. And then 504 loans are typically your large $10, $15, $20 million loans, where the portion of the loan, 50% of the loan is typically going to come from the lender, and then 40% is going to come from an SBA funder. There are some independent companies, nonprofit companies out there that will partner with a lender to basically come up with 50 and 40%, and you put down 10%. And they do that to spread the risk, and you'll have two loans. You'll have a loan with the lender, and you'll have a loan with that SBA Corp to do it. So 504 and 7A are probably the most common types of SBA loans.
Now, you stated that they have to occupy 50% of this building.
Mm-hmm.
Say
51%.
Mm-hmm. Say, for or instance, more. That was their intent in mm-hmm. going in, and they're now in the building, and they cannot maintain the building like they thought they could.
Mm-hmm.
Could they now?
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to tell you what I'm supposed to tell you, then I'm going to tell you what sometimes happens.
Okay.
So what I'm supposed to tell you is that, no, you're not supposed to do that.
Right.
You're supposed to, what you told the lender is what's supposed to happen.
Right.
Now, does that always happen? Do we're in business. Sometimes things change. Hey,
right.
I was going to occupy 51% and now I'm only occupying 20% because I couldn't, that happens.
The economy changes.
I would tell you that if you're trying to fake right and go left and that's your intent up front,
right,
then you just have to be real careful because they really do try to monitor that, at least in the first couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
But have I known people to have their original intent to, it's a 10,000 square foot retail space, my store is going to be 6,000 square feet, and then for whatever reason, they tried 6,000 square feet, it didn't work, so we're going to cut it down to 3, and yeah, that happens all the time.
Right. Just like with the FHA residential side, you mm-hmm. go in saying this is going to be my house for mm-hmm. one full year,
mm-hmm.
and then something happens, you mm-hmm. lose your job 90 days into it.
Mm-hmm.
My clients ask me, well, can I lease it? I don't want to have a foreclosure on me.
Right.
Can I lease
so
it?
So the technical, even to the answer to that, technical, yeah, they could come in default. Do they really check? My experience has been, as long as you're paying your mortgage, right, lender's going to leave you alone for the most part. Or as long as you're paying your mortgage and you're not doing anything illegal,
right,
or that it's going to call this nefarious, mm-hmm, most lenders are going to leave you alone.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect. So, that's always good to know. So just pay your rent, guys. Just pay your rent.
Yeah, yeah.
So what are, I know you didn't want to really get into it, I believe, mm-hmm, that's what you said, but interest rates. Let's talk about interest rates for commercial.
For today's, like what are expected for today's rate right now?
It depends, mm-hmm, and I'm not trying to get out of the answer, on the type of asset, the type of loan, the bank.
Yeah.
I would tell you, if it's an investment asset, which means that you're buying it for income and not for your business,
right,
then you're probably somewhere in the between 4.5 and 5.5,
okay,
depending on your credit worthiness and things of that nature. If it's owner-occupied real estate, commercial real estate, then you're probably somewhere between 4 and 4.5, somewhere in there. Again, assuming that everything is common. Yeah. Now, there are some private commercial lenders out there that take on more risk, either with down payment or your credit. And so, you know, they may be in the 6s and 7s, depends,
okay,
on the type of lender. But for the most part, I would say sub 5.5 is what you should expect.
Before we go, we want to talk about any charity work or volunteer work that you do in the community, so our listeners can know where to find Kevin.
Where to find Kevin. So I will tell you that the charity work that I do the most, I'm the young adult Sunday school teacher for Brentwood Baptist,
okay,
Church.
Okay.
I'm also one of the associate ministers there. I've been licensed there since 2011. I'm a preacher's kid. If you couldn't tell,
awesome,
from the time talking, so I would say that's probably my biggest enjoyment, and then also what I like to do the most. I would also say the best way to find me right now is the podcast,
okay,
online. You can subscribe on iTunes and Google Play, The Real Estate of Life with Kevin Riles and Friends. Enjoying that. I'm on episode 5 now. Matter of fact, one of these segments may end up being an episode. You don't know. I have to tell y'all that afterwards. I'm doing that. And then just generally, I try to keep up. If you follow me on Facebook especially, I speak a lot. I do a lot of sometimes paid speaking, but also pro bono speaking in the community, motivational speaking, you know, encouragement and things of that nature. I feel like I have a good story to tell based on my background, based on how I grew up and things of that nature. So I do a lot of that.
Awesome. Awesome. Very well. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. We do what we ask everyone who comes on the show,
mm-hmm,
you know, to tell us your good, bad,
and ugly
about your business.
Gotcha. So my good, bad, and ugly about my business. The good is I'm actually doing a thing right now, and I don't know how much time I have. I don't know where I put my... I don't think I brought it in here, but there's a thing called the self journal that I actually picked up on Facebook. That's okay. It's okay. I know how to describe it, but ironic that you ask about that. It's a day planner, but a journal at the same time. And one of the things that they've done is they studied how successful people work. And one of the things that they've determined is that being grateful and gratitude and recording your gratefulness every day is a good thing. So the good is I am uber proud to be a minority business owner. I can just remember being a child wanting to be on the cover of Black Enterprise and selling candy. I was a blow pop dude. Everybody at their school had somebody sell blow pop. So yeah. Take me to Sam so I can sell blow pop. So I have to remember that sometimes when things do get bad, that this is something that I've always wanted to do. So the good of my business is that I'm able to be a minority business owner to help everyone, not just minorities, invest in real estate and create wealth. So that's the good. The bad is, and this is for all the agents out there, brokers, overhead can kill your business.
Mm-hmm.
Overhead can kill your business. And specifically, don't try to look like you're in business before you're making money.
Right.
In other words, a lot of times we get caught up on the accoutrements,
right,
of real estate. We can have a really good month or a really good year, and I want to look like I had a really good month or a really good year. And I went through that as well, so I'm not above it. I had the stuff that, car, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And then when the market changed in 2007, 2008, By the grace of God, I had assets to sell. I had property to sell, but I had to get lean. And so I've learned that it's okay to like nice stuff. So I'm not one of those folks that says you should be wearing, you know, secondhand clothing trying to sell real estate or anything of that nature. But I do think you have to prepare for the lean months and the good months. And so understanding overhead is imbalance is huge. So, you know, splurge on yourself. You know, if you have a good month, go get you some. You know, go to that restaurant that you wanted to go to or buy you something. But don't just go out there and just make it rain. You know, just throwing money up in the air. So the good, the bad. That's the bad. And then the ugly, I would say, in our profession specifically, is sometimes the professional decorum in our industry is something that I wish we could work on between each other.
Yes.
I'm sure you guys are aware of, there are certain agents, when you see their name by a listing, you're like, and your client is interested in that listing, you're like, crap,
oh,
I got to call this person or email it, and they're going, and I just don't understand that we're all trying to, you know, do well for our clients. And I know not all of us are cut the same from a knowledge standpoint and a professional standpoint, but I wish that we could do better with each other as far as talking. And on the residential side, especially on the commercial side, because commercial guys can be real type A, you know, what do you want, you know, type of folks. And so that's we can sometimes be ugly with each other in our industry, and that's something I try to change on a daily basis by the way I treat people when they call my office.
That is very true. We do see it out there.
Absolutely.
But of course, we try to be the positive.
Exactly.
The grateful individuals of our industry.
But every once in a while, though. No, okay.
Yeah, you got to match
fire with fire.
We try not to, but sometimes they bring it out.
Yeah, exactly.
Or that nice, nasty.
Yeah, nice, nasty. Exactly. Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Kevin.
Thank you, guys. I'm proud of you guys. Very, very proud of you guys. This is great.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Before you go, please tell them again, tell our listeners again how to get in touch with you if they need you.
Got you. Okay. Again, I'm plugging the podcast because I just started, and I want those downloads out there. It's good information. It's only 30 minutes. Do like me. I subscribe to different podcasts in the morning, and when I walk or I work out, I listen to podcasts. Mm-hmm. It's called The Education of the Mind. I also listen to podcasts in my car. The car is called The University of the Mind. And so I try to educate myself while I'm on the road. So the podcast is called The Real Estate of Life with Kevin Riles. You can go to channel713.com and listen to it there, or you can subscribe on iTunes or Google Play, on Stitcher, and any other podcast service that's out there. It's been promulgated everywhere. You can also find me on Facebook at Kevin Riles as well. Friend request me, ask me questions. I get a lot of direct messages with general real estate questions, especially when it pertains to commercial real estate. So feel free to do that. And then also KevinRiles.com for my speaking, and KevinRilesCommercial.com for my real estate business. So just Google Kevin Riles, you can find me.